Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer weiteren Folge von School Must Go On. Dieses Mal spreche ich auf Englisch mit einem finnischen Bildungsexperten und einem echten Superstar unter den finnischen Lehrern, Pekka Poira. Der Mann ist wie eine Krake, also im positiven Sinne, und arbeitet gleichzeitig an diversesten Baustellen rund um Bildung. Mit mehreren digitalen Lerntools, die er vertritt, mit einer eigenen Firma für Lehrerweiterbildung und noch einem extracurricularen Programm, das Unternehmertum an Schulen fördert, kennt sich dieser studierte Lehrer wirklich gut in Finnland aus. Wir lernen unter anderem, dass die reine Anschaffung von Geräten wie Laptops und Tablets nicht die Lösung ist und dass es auch in einem so oft gelobten Bildungssystem wie dem finnischen durchaus seine Herausforderungen gibt, wenn es zum Beispiel um Lehrerweiterbildung geht oder um den Kulturwandel in der Schule. Ich wünsche euch viel Spaß beim Zuhören. Hello and welcome, Pekka.
Hi, Stefan, and thanks for inviting me.
Pekka, you have several hats that you are wearing. You are working for and you're working with the very well-known company Kahoot. You're also working for Dragonbox. You are also the principal of Startup High School. You are a teacher trainer and you are a mathematics teacher yourself, mathematics being the number one problematic subject around the world. The Kahoot, the Dragonbox, and the Startup High thing. Could you give us the three elevator pitches for these three things so the audience who doesn't know you yet understands what it's all about?
Yes, I can start with the Kahoot, who actually bought the Dragonbox company a year ago. So Dragonbox is originally about math games. How to gamify math learning for kids from 5 year olds up. And now since 2015, we have been actually creating full curriculum for math learning for grades 1 to up. So we are doing it simultaneously in Finland, in Norway, in France, and in Finland, we are having now ready the grades 1 to 3. So idea is to create pedagogically best learning materials what the teacher can buy for helping them to teach kids in school, and it's a combination of games, but also books, storybooks, and like physical manipulatives, and then the Startup High School is about thinking skills and entrepreneurial skills for students age 16 up. So when I was, as you mentioned, I'm originally a math and physics teacher. I've been teaching math and physics in upper secondary high school in Finland for 10 years. But I always felt that we are not teaching thinking skills enough. So that's why I created this online courses that we are calling Startup High. So basically we provide some really inspirational material for young students, how to like light the inner spark in them.
So with these three initiatives, Kahoot, Dragonbox, Startup High, do you still have time to be a teacher or a teacher trainer, or are you focusing on the three initiatives right now?
Yes, the Kahoot and Dragonbox is now one and same company. But no, I'm not teaching in classroom at the moment. I've been around 3 years of school, but I also have my own company. In Finnish, it's called EduHakkerit, so it's like education hackers, and I provide teacher training through that company. So I have online courses for teachers, and then I also travel around Finland and around the whole world, giving speeches.
And, fantastic.
Yeah. So that's the mainly. I noticed like 10 years ago that my mission is to change the education culture for better. And now I have these three initiatives where I aim for like young kids with Kahoot and DragonBox. Then I aim for older kids with Startup High. And then I also try to change the mindset of teachers with my teacher training company. And it would be good to pick only one to aim, but this is so big problem that I feel that I need to try to address it from many sides.
And I also realize sometimes that if you think across all grade levels, and sometimes you also include thinking about teachers, the problems and the solutions are all interconnected in a way. So it helps a lot to actually work on different construction sites every once in a while, because it just broadens your thinking.
Yeah. And basically, if you are thinking about learning, that the same is true no matter how old you are. So the basic solution applies for every human being, no matter how old they are.
Yeah. So I invited you because, well, first of all, you're from Finland, and then you are a superstar educator. You've traveled the world. You're very well known in Finland. And Finland and the education system, one of the best in the world. One of my first questions to you would be, how do you look at the German education system from your viewpoint out of Finland? What's the stereotypes, the opinions, the ideas you hear about the German education system over the past months and years?
Well, I have to say that I actually know quite well your system. When I was in teacher in high school, we have like friendship school from Potsdam. And I've visited there sometimes, so I actually know quite well. We have quite the similar systems, but one thing what I feel where is the biggest difference between Finland and Germany is that the kids, the children, they need to choose quite early what they want to study or where they want to aim in later of their life. So you have many paths that they need to choose quite early. We actually had a similar kind of system like 40 years ago, 40, 50 years ago. But now we have that kind of system that you can change your dream whenever you want, and you can re-educate yourself. So it's more flexible system what we are having here. And that's the stereotype what I am having from your system. But I don't know if it's
it's still very up to date. And me personally, it hurts me a lot every time I think about it, that by the end of fourth grade, you are practically forced to decide. Your parents are forced to decide. Your teachers are telling you what you might should be doing next. And if you're going to go to the Gymnasium, which will qualify you for a university, college, applied science, higher education, or if you're not going to the Gymnasium, which means you are going to go into more technical jobs. And it is very early compared to many other countries in the world. And it's something that is not easy to change, because there's, of course, different powers in politics, the ones who want to preserve certain status and power structures, and the ones who are fighting against it. But it's definitely not an easy revolution to do, but one that a lot of people should think about more often than they actually do.
Yeah, also when we have had this reform like 40, 50 years ago, many people was really against it, and it was a big and long fight. And afterwards, we are really happy that it happened. But what I heard, that it wasn't easy at the time being. But the flexibility is really something I really admire in our system. For example, my brother's wife was in working in shops when she was 25, and then she decided no, I want to study for a vegetarian, a pet doctor. And then she applied for the school, university, and got in, and now she's becoming a pet doctor. So you can always change your career. The age is not the matter. It's just if you want to be something else, just go for it.
And when it comes to teaching and teaching outcomes in Germany, do you have a preset opinion about how Germany has been doing over the past couple of years in PISA studies and digitization, other things? Is there also a picture of Germany that is quite dominant in Finland at the moment?
Well, actually, because you are a large country, it's not easy to be high in the PISA results because you have so many areas. Some areas might be like on average getting better results than what we are, for example, having in Finland, and then some areas are probably having worse, and then the average is a bit lower. So that's why I'm not like looking so closely about what the PISA results, for example, are saying, but about the digitalization and the technology, what I've learned from my visits to your country is that there is still a lot to do. For example, we always thought that we might be a behind because we are not having like the best Wi-Fi in school or enough computers for kids like 10 years ago. And then every time when we visited, no matter what country, we realized, okay, things are quite good at our end. And yes, and my like imagination is that you are actually a bit behind in Germany if we think this digitalization. But that's just my opinion that I have got from really small like points.
You talk like a diplomat. Yeah. But let's talk about digitization in Finland for a second. What's the standard? What's the status quo right now? What has happened over the last 20 years that we would call digitization of Finnish schools?
Well, 10 years ago we struggled a lot about the Wi-Fi. It wasn't enough. Now I think it's really okay everywhere. Then we had some issues with the devices, equipment, if we are having enough or not. For example, we had this change in around 5 years ago in upper secondary high schools, where the final exam was changed as a digital exam. And the only way the students, if they wanted to take the final exam, was to bring their own computer. So suddenly, every student brought their own computer to school. So it was really a fast turn that before almost no one had their computer in lessons, and now everyone are having. And actually, because they bring their own computers, the rate of equipment is quite high. And also it's like one-to-one equipment, one-to-one devices in schools. We are heading to that direction, but it's still a big bottleneck in the lower grades. For example, because we are working with Dragon Box and we are selling math curriculum for grades 1 to 3, and we are having also really strong digital component in our solution. And what we have learned the past 3 years is that there is still a lot of schools who are not having like enough one-to-one equipment in the lower or with the youngest students. But in overall, I think we are in quite good shape.
So this means we've got tests, like real official final exams that are being done through computers. We also have you with a Dragon Box, which is physical, printed and digital materials working together. So Wi-Fi, learning management systems, email addresses, all this sort of stuff is all taken care of. That's kind of like full coverage for all students in all schools, or is there still some black spots on the map where kids don't have Wi-Fi, where kids are not using a learning management system, just like the super basics are not set yet?
Well, we are like geographically really large country, almost the size of Germany, but only 5 million people. So it's really different situation in big cities and in some really small towns where there might be like 10, 20 students in one school. So it's a matter of money in that point. So basically, I think we are having almost a full coverage with everything, but there might be some small black spots in the map,
and in this, if you would draw a pyramid or like a triangle, and you say in the very ground there is Wi-Fi, and then the next stage up is everyone has an email address and a learning management system, and then the next step up is you can access content, and after content might come learning analytics, adaptive learning. Where would you say, what's the common practice right now? How far advanced in the usage of digital tools and content is Finland in the majority of the schools?
Yeah, the Wi-Fi, student emails, and some kind of learning management systems. Those have been like basic stuff 10 years ago.
Wow.
And then access to materials. I think, 10 years ago, we were in quite good shape already. And all those things seems like basic average stuff. The one what you mentioned, that what we are still missing is this adaptive learning content, and that's something that I actually don't see almost everywhere. I think we haven't, or the real big potential in creating our education culture lies in these adaptive learning materials, from my point of view, and there is a huge potential to change the whole game. But I'm waiting that it takes like 5 to 10 years that we are actually having these really good adaptive learning materials, virtual tutoring or virtual teachers. But the basic stuff what you mentioned, that's really average. Everyday life in here.
Yeah, in Germany, we're just now at building the basic stuff. So we are premature compared to you being quite mature. And now for us, this is like looking into the future, talking to you. What's the challenge to enter an age of adaptive learning that is widely used in schools? What is it, a classroom culture challenge? Is it a demand or a supply challenge, that there's simply not enough good tools out there? Where do you see the most problems that you're not entering that next evolutionary stage, if you want to call it like this?
I think it's the lack of the best tools yet. I noticed that there is some companies creating really interesting tools for adaptive learning, especially in China. There is one really interesting company called Squirrel AI, but we just don't have access to that kind of material. So the biggest publishers that are providing the learning material to schools. They are still really traditional, and they are still like having the biggest market share of everything. So at least in Finland, in our language content, I think no one is going to create the best learning material for us, like for Finnish language speakers. So we need to create those on our own, and we haven't been able to do it yet.
Yeah, that's a thought I have very often, that a lot of countries, especially the smaller they get or the smaller the population who speaks a certain language is, might be trapped at some point in the future because they will stay underserved in terms of good quality ed tech, because you need to build it from scratch, from zero again for each country, or you have to let in a foreign country, the Chinese Squirrel AI, to build a Finnish version, which is tricky then in other terms.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When I look at the procurement process in Finland, a school wanting to use, let's say, Kahoot or DragonBox or a learning management system like It's Learning, how does it actually work that the school chooses a tool, chooses a content supplier, and then actually gets it? And who's paying for that? And how does that payment work?
Yeah, so the education is free for everyone in Finland. The school meals are free. So that's the basic thing that we believe as a nation, as a country, that education should be always free for everyone. So that means that the municipalities, cities, or the state is paying for learning material equipments. So, for example, I live in Helsinki, and I worked in the city nearby Helsinki called Vantaa when I was a teacher. It always meant that the city was paying this learning management system, etc., for all the schools that they had. So schools are not the ones who are making the decisions on their own.
But in Germany, we have the problem that schools have, of course, there's gigantic budgets for teachers, because as in Finland, teachers in Germany are also getting paid really well. And we've got money, of course, for the building and for the cleaning and for the heating and everything. But there's almost no dispensable budgets for digital learning tools. There's like no wallet for digital learning tools that's, you know, recharged with government money every year, and then schools or school districts can spend it. Do you know how much disposable digitization budget schools have in Finland?
Well, actually, the budget also in schools are really limited. So the teachers are taking the majority, but the cities are then having like extra budget that they want to spend on digitalization. For example, when I worked in Vantaa, it's a city where it's roughly 200,000 people, and they bought like more than 10,000 Chromebooks for kids. Just it was like one buying. And then they distributed those to each schools. So the schools don't have this budget, but the cities, of course, they want to serve the schools in that way.
So the municipalities, which is not necessarily the best experts in education and digitization, the mayor and his team, and then the administrators of the school district, they are the ones who spend heavily on digitization.
Yeah, or not if they decide not to do it, but it's also because they are competing with persons to the. All the cities wants that there is people moving in, so they need to also take care of the schools that people want to live in their cities. So that's why they also like have some kind of budget to for the schools also, and the government is also making sure that this digitalization is running forward. So they also provide funds for municipalities.
You said two interesting things. You said a lot of kids bring their own computers to school, and you also said that sometimes a municipality buys 10,000 Chromebooks. And in Germany, we've got this big issue right now that not every child has the family backing the purchase of a new cell phone, a tablet, or a laptop, because I mean there's a lot of inequality in among German families. We as Germans always have that that image of Finland of being one of the most equal populations. Do you also struggle with students who are under equipped when it comes to digital devices?
Well, that's the trick that teachers cannot ask for students to bring their own devices in grades 1 to 9. So because the school is free, everything needs to be free, also the laptops, etc. So the idea is that the kids, they don't need to bring anything to school except themselves and clothes on them, but everything else is provided it for them, the books, pencils, tablets, food, everything. So that's the basis of the equality. It doesn't, yeah, so you don't need to have money at all, or you can have like super health, wealthy family. It doesn't see in the school. And also one thing, when we had this corona situation in Helsinki and the schools went shut down, the schools provided the food, the school meal homes. So we had like food taxis where the food was delivered from school or from bigger kitchens to kids at home, so that every kid will have at least one warm meal per day.
Wow. So you even kept the school meals services going, not just the teaching probably went online, but even the school meal still was delivered. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. But now we have a difference after the age 16, when you go to gymnasium or upper secondary high school. There you need to buy your own books. And nowadays you also need to bring your own laptop, but of course the schools are having like some amount of laptops that they will borrow for the kids or young students who don't have like money for their own. So the idea is in those schools that most of them are most of the kids bring their devices. But we are having actually a discussion, really heavy discussion right now, that the upper secondary school should also be like compulsory for everyone. And we probably will go to this system in next year. The political atmosphere is driving it really heavily. And if we go there so that everyone needs to be in school until they are 18, it also means that the upper secondary school will be free for everyone. So then it means that also there they need to provide the books and laptops for everyone. And now we are just trying to find where we find the money for pay all this.
What's the typical device that most kids use? You mentioned the Chromebooks already. They come in pretty handy because you don't have to do so much administration, and you can easily give it to the next student, and there's not all the hard drive problems and the resetting. Is this the most common device in Finland today, the Chromebook?
Well, I think it's a bit Wild West at the moment, because this is so young situation. We have had this like only 10 years, and the cities and the municipalities, they are taking their own choices. So some municipalities are leaning heavily to Chromebooks. I think the Windows machines are most common, I would say. Some wealthy municipalities are using only iPads or MacBooks, but I would say the Windows devices are the most common. At least the administration level, almost all the municipalities are using those. We have some Linux municipalities, but only few.
In Germany, there's a lot of fear that people will purchase the wrong devices now, and there's a lot of over-regulation. Schools have to write 20 to 30 pages to apply for computers, and then the state looks at it, and the government gives the money only if all the check marks have been done on the applications. Is there mistakes looking back into the past decade of supplying devices to teachers and students that you would say, well, this and this we would have done different if we would have known when it comes to devices?
Well, my own experience is that the for example, in Vantaa, the city just decided, let's buy like a lot devices. And it was also like marketing stunt, so that we were one of the first municipalities that bought like really a lot devices. So in our school, and because it came so fast, the teachers wasn't like up to speed. So the teachers kept teaching in the old traditional way, and then we had a lot of devices, but the teachers didn't use those devices in their education. So then it early days, the kids are felt, no, well, why I carry these devices if we don't use it? And then they just left us home. And for example, in our teacher lounge, we had like 150 unused tablets in the closet that no one wanted. So we were like really fed up with the devices. So the culture is actually the one which needs to also be shifted if we want to use the tablets. No one is learning if they are carrying the tablet, they need to use it correctly.
And how would you shift a culture as time efficiently as possible?
It's a good question. In my head, it goes that the culture changes with the adaptive learning materials, because I don't have like a huge trust for teachers that they would use the devices wisely in large scale. How to use device wisely is to connect to other people, cooperate, like don't write your own notes. Open a shared document with your friends, with your peers, and write like shared notes. So what I think, how we should use technology as a really powerful learning tool is to just share what we are doing with our peers. So what we are doing in work life nowadays. But the teachers, if they go with the traditional way, that they need try to shift the knowledge to students, you don't need the device for that. But more communication with devices, and then we also can personalize the learning. But for this, I really feel we need those adaptive learning materials, because teachers cannot personalize the teaching enough. It's just too hard to do.
You draw from quite a wide range of experience. You, with Kahoot, you know how it's like to create social learning settings. With DragonBox, you know how it's like to create gamified learning settings. And you're also a teacher trainer. Is teacher training, in your opinion, a very important brick in building the ladder, building the stairway to a more digitized school?
No. I actually... What would be the most effective for teachers to learn is not from teacher trainers, it's from peers. So what I would recommend for teacher is that don't plan your lesson or lessons or your teaching on your own, but group yourself. Have a colleague, two, three, four teachers, and plan everything together. And this is something that shifts everyone's mindset of how to create better learning.
In Germany, the teachers have a very strong sense for autonomy. They can very freely choose how they bring across the subject matter in every lesson they teach. And there's also no need to participate very regularly in teacher trainings. There's also no need to exchange your materials and collaborate. You don't even have to open up your classroom to visitors, colleagues, friends, people who just want to sneak in and see how you teach. So everyone's very much fighting a battle on their own in the majority of the cases.
Yeah, that's a perfect description from Finnish teacher.
As well,
yeah,
really? That,
yeah, this is 100% correct. That's exactly how it is in here. It is changing a bit, but slowly. But this is the common way to do it, how you describe it, still nowadays.
I talked to a German mother who's educating her children in New Zealand. Talked to her a few days ago in my podcast, and she describes a teacher training or professional development system in New Zealand, which is very much based on the ideal situation you described, where teachers show other teachers how they do it, they co-create, they even co-teach sometimes. So there might be someone considering himself or herself a professional teacher trainer, but they're not lecturing other teachers. They're entering their classroom and they're creating lessons for the teachers that they want to just inspire and develop. So it's a very open classroom. Sometimes there's parents and colleagues sitting in the back of the classroom, just watching, just observing, and taking some interesting inspirations out of that.
Yeah,
it's very different. Huh?
Yeah, I'm trying to create this kind of culture with my teacher training company. I'm having or creating different kind of online courses for teachers. And the trick is that no teacher can attend on their own. So if you want to attend my online courses, you need to gather a minimum of three colleagues around you. So or the team needs to be minimum of three persons. And then you come to the online course together. And then there, I have tried to make really inspirational videos for them. So the idea is that they are sitting around the same computer, they press play, and then the video is starting to describing something, what I want to tell them, or shake their minds, and then they stop the video every time when they want to say something to their colleague. So the idea is that they are peer learning together. And I have like several lessons in my online course. So the idea is that they gather around the same computer many times enough so that when the and have these pedagogical discussions so that when the online course ends, they have created a habit of having these pedagogical discussions among them. And I also try to like train the team about psychological safety, about communication, so that it would really unite themselves as a like powerful team in the school, and then they can be the change makers in their schools.
Now, many times when I'm sitting with friends and we're dreaming about professional development of teachers, this moment of time budget, this discussion about time budget of teachers comes up, and people say, you know, when are teachers supposed to learn all this new stuff? They are so busy already teaching 26, 28 hours every week with all the prep work and all the correcting all the exercises and tests in the evening. There's just no time. How do teachers in Finland take time out of their busy schedules to develop themselves professionally?
Yeah, I believe that teacher can like develop professional skills only while teaching, because as you said, there is no time. So we shouldn't even try to educate teacher or train teacher outside the classroom. And that's why I recommend the teachers to team up, because that's something that they do inside their schools already. So and that's something that we believe also in DragonBox, that we provide the full curriculum, and we also provide a DragonBox method how to really teach math efficiently or effectively. And we have built inside the product like learning path for the teacher. So while the teacher is teaching through our material, they are also learning about how to teach math. But there is no outside math lesson courses, because there is no time for teachers to have those.
So how far does it go? Do teachers actually also bring their classes together? So it's not one class, it's two classes. They're taught by one teacher or by a teacher in a team. Or is everyone preparing together? All the teachers are preparing together, but then everyone goes to his or her own classroom and teaches his or her 25 kids individually.
Whatever works. All those different things that you described can be done. And every time when you are co-working, no matter how, it is helping you to learn more from your profession. For example, what I have done, one example is that I as a math teacher had a colleague who was a Finnish language teacher, and then we decided to, okay, let's co-work and co-create a course together where the kids are in the same classroom, we teachers were in the same classroom, and she was teaching Finnish language and I was teaching math at the same time in the same classroom. And the idea is that if you are having two teachers in the same room, neither of them can talk, because otherwise there is talking together. So we teamed up the kids and taught them how to choose what the team should learn and when. And then we gave them a lot of tools, like learning, tried to teach them learning skills. And then there was, the end result was that in the same classroom, there was always ongoing math lesson and Finnish language lesson, because in some small group was teaching math and the next group was learning Finnish language. So it was really interesting setup, and I have to say that planning how we should team the kids, what kind of things we should teach them, so that it would benefit both the math learning and the Finnish language learning. It was the best school for me how to be a better teacher.
One stereotype that Germans have when they think of Finland is that the Finnish education system, there's more breaks, there's more free time, there's less homework, there's less emphasis on tests. Is that true in your opinion?
Yes, of course. I don't know how you see it, but the basic setup is that in 1 hour, there is a 15 minutes break. So if you are 2 hours in school, you are having 2 45-minute lessons and 2 50-minute breaks. And we try not to give too much homework. And also, yeah, the school days, I think, are quite short. So what I think you are having it understood correctly.
It's interesting because you're ranking among a lot of East Asian countries in the PISA study, but you're taking a very different approach, more breaks, more free time, less homework. It's the antithesis of the work harder, study more, live less kind of mantra that you can see in many other countries that rank really high in PISA. Do you have an explanation why these results you're achieving year after year are so good, while you are going a much less cramming, teaching for the test-oriented way, a much more holistic teaching approach? Do you know why good results and all that free time come together so well in Finland?
I have some ideas. It might be illusion, but the learning is always really hard work, as you mentioned. But in order to work hard, you need to be motivated. You cannot learn anything unless you work hard and you are motivated. So I think the key is that you need to play hard. If the learning is like playing, then you are also motivated more. And also, we have some kind of limit in our head, how many minutes or hours we can work hard in a day. And I think that after 2 hours hard work or 3 4 hours hard work, you are pretty exhausted. So you need to have like a lot of breaks so that you feel energized through the whole day. That's like one part of it. But also the why we are succeeding well, I think it's our culture and the respect for teachers and the parents are really on our side, on teachers' side. So the homes are educating the kids to respect their teachers, and if you combine that with teachers who have been minimum of 5 years in universities trying to become a really good pedagogical teacher, it's a good combination. And also this you mentioned, we are not testing, we only actually have one national test and it's after the 12th grade. So in the first 9 years or actually first 12 years, this kids don't have to take any kind of tests if the teacher don't want to test them. So,
Pekka, obviously there's one question that everyone's keen to know about. How did Finland react to the COVID-19 pandemic, and what did Finnish schools do over the last 7 months?
Yeah, we closed the country as many others, and also the schools were closed at one part in May, and so it was like one overnight stunt for teachers to transfer their teaching online. What we have, or the common understanding is that the teachers really pulled this greatly. So for some reason, we were actually well enough equipped. We had all the learning management system and everything on place, so the teachers actually could pull this through. The downsides, what we are learning, of course, as I think in every country, some students were not beneficial at all. For other kids, this was actually a better than the normal schooling. That the most motivational kids, I think they actually, this wasn't hurting them, and they were keeping up their learning. But we also lost some kids, like we didn't have any kind of connections anymore. So this is something that is dividing the kids, especially when we are believing the equality of everything, every kid, and we want that every kid are having a really good schooling. This part is hurting a bit us. And now we try to better our system and everything so that we can be connected with every kid. And for example, that reason, when we are having this second wave now, everyone, the government and everyone are saying that the last thing that we are doing is closing the schools.
Did the majority of teachers in the lockdown switch to a live synchronous way of teaching with video lessons, or did they choose an asynchronous way of teaching where you supply some homework, some work kids can do on their own, and then you check in with them on a regular basis?
I think the latter was the most common in my imagination, but I really cannot tell. Any possible things happened. I think many teachers were in this synchronous live teaching, but I would say that it's a bit heavy for the teachers also. So I think there is some many different things happened.
Let's talk for one minute about curriculum development. There is a curriculum that we've more or less inherited over the past years. It's math, it's science, it's languages, and there's an ongoing conversation by all parties, by all stakeholders of society, saying we should integrate more 21st century skills. We should integrate mindfulness, happiness into the classroom. Some people say we should teach more entrepreneurship skills. How is Finland dealing with all the new ideas that should be taught in school? And at the same time, there is already a pretty packed curriculum with the basic stuff of science, math, and languages.
Yeah, we are also having the same kind of problem, that the curriculum is getting bigger and bigger if you count the pages. The newest curriculum what we are having now, it's from 2014. It's actually quite schizophrenic curriculum, in a way that it's having all the material what you said, both the learning or the 21st century skills and also all the subjects. So we are actually having a curriculum which is having two sides. This learning side and then the subject side, and those are not communicating really well together. So it's basically up to teacher which part of the curriculum they are following the most. Are they leaning to the subject? Are they leaning to the 21st century skills? So it's something that what we are learning at the moment. But what we are really happy is that because the curriculum is having both, we can, like, now as a teacher collectively choose our path, what we want to follow, and we are anyway following the curriculum. So we are not breaking any law or anything.
Now, with one of your initiatives, the Startup High School, where you're the principal, I believe what you're doing is you're trying to enhance or enrich the curriculum by integrating some extracurricular activity that the teacher doesn't need to teach, but you take this part and you come into the schools, or you might just be the digital teacher and teach something like entrepreneurship skills and creative thinking. Is that also a way that Finnish schools and the Finnish education system is pursuing, that you just bring in specialists for a day or two to teach something that the daily life teacher wouldn't be able to teach, and then still you have best of both worlds? You continue with the basics in science and math, but at the same time you can also bring in some entrepreneurship skills teaching with an expert for a day or two, or maybe a week or a month during the year.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to do, providing like really high quality content for kids. But what we are not having yet is the culture of using extra curriculum activities, or like ordering the teaching outside your own, from your own teachers. I mean, because the budget of the school is so limited and the teacher's salary is taking most of it, I think the teachers in school don't want to support this kind of approach, that even if the quality of teaching would be better if we order it from a company, from startup high school, we don't have the culture. And I think the teacher or the teacher union, they are a bit against that kind of approach at the moment. The world will be different in 10 years, but now it's this is a complicated system in many ways.
Same in Germany, same here. It's, even though it would be amazing for teachers because it would free up some time if they could let loose for a day or two, let an expert teach their class, and they could maybe do some professional development in the meantime, or prepare the next month of their classroom teaching. Before we finish, I want to talk about one thing. I want us to zoom out and think of the government and its leverage on developing the education system further and further. And I've talked to a friend of mine, a German, who's now working in the United States school administration. And one thing I learned from him is the idea of competition. A big driver for the United States education system is that you create competition between schools. State-financed private charter schools versus state schools, virtual schools versus physical schools, homeschooling versus the traditional physical presence schooling, and so on and so on. And you can see it with philanthropists like Bill Gates flushing money into this sort of development. Obama did it too. The big belief concept that competition among schools will actually elevate the whole school system. And from what I've read about Finland, you're not particularly fans of that competition idea. It's much more the equality idea that also leads to the elevation of the school system. Am I getting these ideas on a very meta level, on a very top kind of like level? Am I getting these ideas right?
We are really, the equality is like fundament number one, and everything is based on that. So we don't even have any kind of private schools in a way that we have publicly funded private schools, but the publicly funded private schools are getting the same amount of money than the public schools. So we really don't have any kind of private schools. So the idea is that we have really united and high quality school network, and it doesn't matter in which part of Finland you are living, you will be having a really good education anyway. What the PISA results are though saying, that the level of equality is actually getting down a bit. So that's a matter of debate in our country at the moment, that how we turn this upside down, so that we will again have the status of really good equality.
And what creates that upward stream, that willingness to change in schools, if it's not the next town school doing something better, stealing away students from you? How do you create that motivation to change and keep up with new trends?
It's a really good question. I think as teachers, we always want to do what's best. And that's one motivation of checking what's happening outside, what we can do for doing teaching better. So as you described that you are really autonomous in Germany, we are having the same amount of autonomy, so almost 100%. So that also gives us like the feeling of responsibility to do good things. But there is good sides and bad sides in this system. The one is that if there is really good way of developing the schools, but the teachers are not believing it, the change won't happen. So, yeah.
You have to win the teachers' hearts.
Yeah, basically that's how it goes.
Fantastic, and I'm sure you're doing a good job.
No, I'm trying. Pekka. I'm really trying.
Thank you so much, Pekka. This was an amazing conversation. So many great insights, so much inspiration, so much positive ideas that I'm taking out of it. I'm sending you very warm greetings from Berlin all the way to Helsinki, and hope we can see each other live at some point in this life.
Yeah, it would be really nice to see you at someday after the world is again a bit different what is nowadays.
Fantastic. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.